All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is December 9th, 2025. And our top story this morning is one of my favorite companies in the world. You see the little eye roll there when I did that. We're talking about NVIDIA once again. And before we get into this, I have to do the whole disclosure thing. I am short NVIDIA. Now that that is out of the way, yesterday, the big story about midday, it broke that President Trump was going to approve the sale of H200 GPUs to the Chinese, provided, of course, that NVIDIA is going to give you about 25% to the U.S. government. Yep, legal for a fee. Remember, if we sell these GPUs to the Chinese, it's a national security risk because we can't let this technology fall into the hands of the Chinese military. But if you give 25% off the top to the government, it is no longer a security risk and it is no longer dangerous if the technology falls into the hands of the Chinese military. I'm glad we cleared that up. That 25% makes a big difference. Okay. Look, the real big thing here is the H200. That is the prior generation, the Hopper generation. The current generation that is the most popular product at NVIDIA is the Blackwell. And they're about to release the Rubin, which so technically by the time these things were actually to start moving, the H200s would be two generations old. So it's no longer top of the line, not by any measure. But, you know, hey, man, you got to blow into that bubble. You know what I mean? The AI bubble, it is getting wonky here. It's wobbly. They're very close to it with the pin. There's all kinds of stories about it this morning once again. And look, if everybody is debating whether or not it's a bubble, that means it's a bubble. All right? I don't know if you knew this, right? When I don't know why we're even talking about this. If half of the market thinks it's in a bubble, it is. That is how it works. There's people out there saying, oh, if everybody says housing is in a bubble, then it's not in a bubble. No, that's not how that works. Everybody said housing was in a bubble in 2008, and the bubble burst. All right. So, yeah, we're blowing into that bubble. Why? Because the stock market, President Trump views that as his report card for how he's doing as president. I don't know why he does that, but that's just how he operates. Meanwhile, China's saying thanks, but no thanks. Chinese regulators reminding all of their companies that they are limiting access to the H200 GPUs, that they have a preference for domestically produced chips from companies like Huawei, that they're worried about America putting backdoors in their chips. Why? Because that's what the Chinese do. So why wouldn't we do it? So they're saying, thanks, no thanks. We don't want the H200 GPUs. So is this really going to make a difference in NVIDIA sales at the end of the day? And the really hilarious thing about this, on the same freaking day, almost to the minute aligning with President Trump making this announcement, there was another story about a GPU, a Chinese GPU smuggling bust, this time out of Houston, Texas. Two Chinese nationals and a Canadian with a Chinese-sounding name were arrested for smuggling $160 million worth of H100 and H200 GPUs into China. How'd you like to be the FBI agents or the CIs or whoever, the people who were working on this bust, spent all the time staking it out and doing the research and gathering the data and getting the warrants and making the arrests, only to have the president make what you just busted essentially legal on the same freaking day, as long as they pay 25%, of course. So, look, do the Chinese want these chips or don't they? Are we going to sell them to them or aren't we? They're a risk, but not if you pay 25%. China's like, we don't want them, but at the same time, we're smuggling them into the country. And by the way, NVIDIA, you're still insisting that you have no idea these chips are being smuggled into China, playing stupid with everybody. How about you guys figure your shit out and get back to us? At the end of the day, I think all of these announcements will have no effect whatsoever on NVIDIA's bottom line because this bubble's days are numbered. And that's why NVIDIA gave up most of those gains yesterday. Also going on this morning, we've got three distinct stories about some of the hyperscalers and one not hyperscaler. The first one, Sam Altman is increasingly desperate over at OpenAI. Since issuing that code red, he is trying to right that ship. And this article in the Wall Street Journal has some scary language in it because they're talking, Sam is using phrases like, give people what they want, better use of user signals. These phrases mean OpenAI is going to turn ChatGPT into an even bigger sycophant than it already is. And that's been one of the biggest criticisms of ChatGPT. No matter how bad or stupid your idea is, ChatGPT is going to tell you it's a good idea. And look, guys, telling people your idea is stupid, maybe, you know, the people who are like, oh, we need positive reinforcement, everybody gets a trophy. I guess some people are like upset by things like that. But if somebody's like, I'm going to take this fork and stab out my own eyeball, somebody better be there to tell them that's a stupid idea. ChatGPT doesn't do that. It reinforces everything you ask it. It gives you that drip of dopamine. And Sam Altman is talking about doubling down on that, which was one of the biggest criticisms of GPT-5. And this is supposedly the thing that's going to make everybody so much money and so much more productive by reinforcing bad ideas. Because why we're programming our chatbot to be more like a freaking Candy Crush game that just no matter what, you get the bleeps, the boops, and the blings, and the ding, ding, dings. Give your brain that dopamine you become addicted to so that you keep using the product so Sam Altman can sell ads because his product doesn't make any money. That's what OpenAI is up to. And now they're also talking about rushing GPT 5.2 out the door, even though company employees are saying they don't want to do it. It's not ready yet. Cham's like, nope, get it out there. These are the actions of a dying company. OpenAI burns cash. They need to raise more. They don't make a profit. And when OpenAI goes, this bubble goes. Meanwhile, you've got Meta is transitioning from llama to avocado. Does anybody know what that means? Long story short, Meta is going from open source to closed source. Ever since they hired they acquired Scale AI and they hired Alexander Wang, one of the world's youngest billionaires ever, to come in and be the master of their AI superintelligence labs or whatever they're talking about. They're making the big change from open source to closed source. That's stirring up some controversy at Meta. There is another big, giant, cash-burning ship trying to change direction. And when I say cash burning, I mean Meta's AI is a cash burn, a massive cash burn. The company is still profitable, thankfully, because of their ads business. Meanwhile, Apple, they're talking about Apple in the news today, saying while for years everybody looked at Apple and said they missed the boat on AI, they're missing out, they're not burning all these hundreds of billions of dollars on CapEx. Oh, look at Apple. They don't even know how to light their own money on fire. Now they're saying maybe it's a good thing that Apple didn't burn hundreds of billions of dollars of their own cash. That's interesting. Apple is going from AI laggard to prudent steward of its shareholders' capital. Imagine that. Again, the narrative in this AI bubble, it is shifting dramatically here. Meanwhile, we got a story out of Korea that has really got me grinding my teeth this morning. The Korean pension system is dumping U.S. dollars in order to prop up the Korean won. Now, they're calling it strategic hedging, but let me put this in simple terms for you what they're doing. The politicians want their currency supported, and so they're using people's retirement money as an expendable asset to burn in the fire of propping up their own currency. A pension fund manager is supposed to have a fiduciary obligation to his pensioners, to the people whose retirement fund he is steward of, not to be beholden to politicians who want their numbers to look better and so burn everybody's retirement to keep our currency propped up. And this is one of my biggest criticisms of the financial services industry. And one reason why I think the whole concept of retirement as we know it may go down in history as a failed social experiment. Look at what's going on in retirements with pension funds, what the Koreans are doing, with private credit being dumped into pension funds, with Social Security, which the politicians have done an awful job with the Social Security Trust Fund, which is just a line of red text on a spreadsheet somewhere. The people we trust to manage our life savings for us so we can retire are not trustworthy. And this whole grand social experiment of working for 20 or 30 years and then enjoying your golden years, it may not be there for future generations if we don't change course. Meanwhile, we've got another perfect example of this. Bally's is borrowing $1.1 billion in a private credit deal to build a casino in the Bronx. Anybody ever been to the Bronx? You know what the Bronx could really use? A casino. And you know what Bally's tried to use for collateral to borrow this $1.1 billion to build a casino in the Bronx? They tried to use an unbuilt casino in Chicago as collateral to borrow $1.1 billion. And, you know, take a look at Chicago. Do you know what Chicago could really use? A casino. Never mind the fact that there is now a casino on every cell phone in America because of Polymarket and Kalshi and DraftKings and BetMGM and all these stupid ads they pump in front of you and Hulu. Kind of, oh, I'm a thrillionaire. I'm addicted to the same dopamine drip that Sam Altman's trying to use to sell his shitbots. Gambling is everywhere. Oh, I forgot to mention Robinhood. It's everywhere. Casinos are a dying business. Take a look at what's going on in Las Vegas. And yet private credit is loaning $1.1 billion to Bally's to build a casino in a place that doesn't need a casino. And where are they going to park that debt? They're going to park it in your retirement. Meanwhile, EJF is a fund. That's a financial outfit. They are selling significant risk transfers, or SRTs. We've been talking a lot about these lately. They're selling SRTs tied to commercial real estate debt from regional banks. Okay, that's great. Significant risk transfers from one of the most significant risks in the market today, commercial real estate, and it's going to have a double-digit yield attached to it. Now, remember, a significant risk transfer is basically insurance. Double-digit percentage yield. It's going to cost somewhere like 10 to 13% in order to insure this debt against collapse every year. How good of an investment can this possibly be if it's paying you a yield? I said this back, like several years ago during the DeFi boom, during the previous crypto craze. I said, if somebody is offering you a risk-free 15% return, run. Same thing with these SRTs tied to commercial real estate. And last but not least, this chief investment officer of PIMCO, he's in the news saying you can't trust what the ratings agencies are saying about all this private credit and these SRTs. Oh, that's just great. And everybody remember the scene with Georgia with the big black glasses at Standard & Poor's from The Big Short? Yep, that's going on again too. What's the worst thing that could happen? Don't answer that. We got a lot to talk about this morning. Let's shrink my big melon of a head and see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button and hit that subscribe button right next to it, you new guys, so you can come back and have your coffee with the melon heads as we go through markets every single day. Right now, the S&P 500 is pretty much unchanged here, barely in the red, down about 4.5 points, 0.07% to the downside. The Dow is also down about 40 points, 0.08% in the red this morning. And the NASDAQ is leading the way lower, 48 points down, or 0.19, almost 0.2% lower for the NASDAQ. The dollar's a little bit stronger this morning at 99.15. That's up 3 basis points, putting ever so slightly downward pressure on asset prices. Looking over at the bond market, we got the 30-year yield is at 4.776. That is lower by 4 basis points. The 10-year yield, 4.148, off by 2.5 points. The 2-year yield is at 3.567, down by 1.5. And the 1-month is at 3.724, down by 1 point. We are expecting the Fed's 25 basis point rate cut midday tomorrow. That is all but a certainty at this point. And checking in on Japan, we have got the Japanese 10-year yield. We've been watching this one because of that yen carry trade risk. 1.964 this morning, off the highs from yesterday and down a basis point and change. We did get some news from the Bank of Japan here. BOJ's Ueda says Japan is getting closer to sustainable inflation. What is sustainable inflation? I honestly couldn't tell you. I think they're telling us 2%, but I don't think that's sustainable either. That's just the temperature at which the frog doesn't realize he's being boiled alive. But Bank of Japan Governor Kazuo Ueda said the central bank is getting closer to attaining its inflation target, adding to signals that the BOJ may raise its interest rates at a policy meeting next week. So the BOJ is going to hike, but he's saying we're almost there. We're closer to 2% inflation on a sustained basis, Ueda said in an interview with the Financial Times recorded Monday night. I can say that, I think, even though the new prime minister is already talking about the next round of stimulus. Ueda spoke amid elevated expectations that the BOJ will raise borrowing costs to 0.75%, the highest level since 1995, when it delivers its next policy decision on the 19th. So what the BOJ is doing here is they're saying, yep, we're probably going to raise, guys, but don't freak out because we're almost there on inflation. The job is almost done. So try not to get too worried here. This is Ueda always trying to be a dovish hawk, if that makes any sense. He's trying to raise rates, but he keeps saying these dovish things to try to maintain calm as he's doing it. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold is a little bit higher here, $1.50 or $1.41 higher for spot gold, $4,192. That's up 0.04%. February COMEX gold futures at $42.20. That's up $3 or 0.07%. Spot Silver is having a good morning here. 58.71 for Spot Silver, up 57 cents or about 1% higher. Meanwhile, March COMEX Silver Futures back above 59 bucks. 59.18 here, up 76 cents or 1.25% higher. Looks like we're going to make another run at 60, boys. I like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, is down 2.37% this morning. Platinum is down 0.42%. Palladium is down 0.22%. And even WTI crude futures are down by 0.25%, 58.73 for January oil futures. Speaking of commodities, we got an interesting story here. Trafigura boosts trader payouts after another bumper profit. One of the world's biggest commodities trading houses is doing really well here. Trafigura reported a strong year for both its oil and metals divisions as the commodities trading giant boosted payouts to staff and profit remained resilient. The company posted net income of $2.67 billion in the financial year through September, its first under new CEO Richard Holtom. While that's down 3% from the previous year, it comes as headwinds in the oil market hit profitability at some rival trading houses. The company's metals and bulk commodities division performed particularly strongly, Holtom said at the annual report published on Tuesday. In an accompanying video, the CEO said the overall trading conditions were not easy and that the firm's results were pretty good on an absolute level, but also at a relative level compared to our peers. The earnings are also the latest indication of how profitability for some of the industry's biggest firms, at least, has leveled out at much higher levels than were normal before the energy crisis. Prior to 2021, Trafigura's highest profit was $2.2 billion in 2013. These guys are making stupid bank off of the higher commodity costs that have been caused by the inflation of 2022 and, of course, the Russian invasion of Ukraine and what happened to natural gas prices and oil prices after that. Trafigura has made a lot of money here. But there's an interesting tidbit. Trafigura's bumper results are important for meeting share buyback commitments, which are the main way it rewards top executives and which have grown in recent years after a wave of senior departures. At $2.9 billion, those payouts jumped 43% from the previous year, outstripping the company's earnings. Though group equity was maintained over $16 billion. Trafigura is paying out more money in dividends and share bonuses pretty much to their executives than the company is making. So they're burning cash by paying their people too much. This is a privately traded commodity company, but that's not sustainable. And they've been doing it. There's articles about this going all the way back to June. Trafigura is one to watch here. When I see them paying out more than their profits to their executive team, something's off. So keep an eye on that one. Bitcoin, meanwhile, is trading at $90,341 this morning as priced on Coinbase. That's off by about 300 bucks here. We're still kind of in what looks like a bear flag pattern here. And I am expecting a further breakdown for Bitcoin prices any day now. We'll see. I thought it was going to come about 2 weeks ago, and it did not. Here's the main story this morning, though. Trump greenlights NVIDIA H200 AI chip sales to China. If U.S. gets a 25% cut, why? Because that's the threshold where it's no longer a threat to national security and thus yours and my safety, says Xi, responded positively. We'll see just how positive that response was. President Donald Trump on Monday said NVIDIA will be allowed to ship its H200 artificial intelligence chips to approved customers in China and elsewhere on the condition that the U.S. gets a 25% cut. Chinese President Xi Jinping responded positively to the proposal, Trump wrote in a Truth Social post, and you can believe it because President Trump wrote it in a Truth Social post, and therefore it must be the truth, right? The policy will support American jobs, strengthen U.S. manufacturing, benefit American taxpayers, and blow into the AI bubble. Oh, I may have ad-libbed that last part there a little bit. The H200 is a higher grade chip than the H20, but not the company's top of the line product. Meanwhile, China's saying, no thanks. China to limit access to NVIDIA's H200 chips despite Trump export approval, the Financial Times reports. This one came out not too long after the announcement that they were going to allow the chips to be sold. Beijing is set to limit access to NVIDIA's advanced H200 chips despite U.S. President Trump's decision to allow the export of the technology to China, the Financial Times reported on Tuesday, citing two people with knowledge of the matter. Regulators in Beijing have been discussing ways to permit limited access to the H200, NVIDIA's second best generation of artificial intelligence chips, according to the report. Such a move would add a hurdle to NVIDIA and other top U.S. chipmakers' ability to address the China market after Trump's Monday announcement appeared to settle a debate over whether these companies should keep their global lead by selling AI chips to China or withhold shipments. NVIDIA shares, which had risen as much as 2% in pre-market trading, paired gains after the report and were last up about 0.6%. The company did not respond to Reuters' request for comment. Beijing has been pushing back against domestic firms' use of U.S. technology, especially NVIDIA chips, as it retaliates against American restrictions. All right, so Trump says you can have the chips. China says we don't want the chips. And then we get this one. U.S. detains two men accused of smuggling NVIDIA AI gear to China. Who says they don't want the chips? Then why are you smuggling them? But I digress. The U.S. Department of Justice has detained two men for allegedly violating export control laws by attempting to smuggle at least $160 million worth of NVIDIA chips into China. A third, the owner of a Houston company, has already pleaded guilty. The department alleges the men operated a smuggling network that spanned the Houston business run by Alan Howe Sue and several warehouses across the U.S., which replaced NVIDIA labels from H100 and H200 AI chips with the fictional Sankyon brand before shipping them. Fanye Gong, a Chinese citizen residing in Brooklyn, New York, and Benlin Yuan, a Canadian from Ontario, are alleged to have conspired with employees of a Hong Kong-based logistics company and a China-based AI technology company to circumvent U.S. export controls. And no, guys, this is not the same story that I did that video on last week about Brian Curtis Raymond and his chip smuggling network. This is another chip smuggling network. And no, it's not the three Chinese individuals that were busted in California about 2 months ago. That was a third Chinese chip smuggling network. And it's not the Singapore chip smuggling network that was busted earlier this year. But remember, guys, there's no reason to believe this crazy rando conspiracy theory that NVIDIA is selling their chips into China via Singapore and Malaysia. There's no reason to believe it other than the fact that we can all see it happening every freaking day. There's no reason to believe that's happening. NVIDIA stock is up about 0.25% ahead of the opening bell here, $186.13, up 52 cents. And a reminder, everybody, I am short NVIDIA. Meanwhile, we got this one in the Wall Street Journal today. Look how desperate Sam Altman is looking here. Oh, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Sam Altman's sprint to correct OpenAI's direction and fend off Google. The CEO is prioritizing achieving mass popularity through ChatGPT versus moonshot projects like artificial general intelligence. When OpenAI CEO Sam Altman made the dramatic call for a code red last week to beat back a rising threat from Google, he put a notable priority at the top of the list of fixes. The world's most valuable startup should pause its side projects like its Sora video generator for 8 weeks and focus on improving ChatGPT, its popular chatbot that kicked off the AI boom. In doing so, Altman was making a major strategic course correction and taking sides in a broader philosophical divide inside the company between its pursuit of popularity among everyday consumers and its quest for research greatness. OpenAI was founded to pursue artificial general intelligence. Remember, it was a charity, broadly defined as being able to outthink humans at almost all tasks. But for the company to survive, Altman was suggesting it may have to pause that quest and give the people what they want. Wait a minute. For the company to survive, this is the most valuable startup in history. There's an entire investment bubble. For the company to survive, what? Did we just casually drop that in there and everybody's like not noticing we're talking about survival now? Not thriving, not curing cancer, survival. And give people what they want. That's the scary thing right here. The move was striking in part because one criticism of Altman's leadership has been his reluctance to put limits on what the company can accomplish. And it was telling that he instructed employees to boost ChatGPT in a specific way through better use of user signals, he wrote in his memo. With that directive, Altman was calling for turning up the crank on a controversial source of training data, including signals based on one-click feedback from users rather than evaluations from professionals of the chatbot's responses. An internal shift to rely on that user feedback had helped make ChatGPT's 4 model so sycophantic earlier this year that it has been accused of exacerbating severe mental health issues for some users. And that is an understatement. ChatGPT was convincing kids to kill themselves. Because no matter how bad your idea is, ChatGPT will tell you to do it. And they're doubling down on that through the use of one-click dopamine-driven user feedback, giving people what they want. This is not going to make for a better product. This is going to make for a worse product. OpenAI is set to release a new model called 5.2 this week that executives hope will give it new momentum, particularly among coding and business customers. They overruled some employees who asked to push back the model's release so the company could have more time to make it better, according to people familiar with the matter. Nope, just hurry up and rush it out the door. We need to innovate. We need to do something. Google's eating our lunch. So just give people more dopamine and put this garbage product out as soon as possible because the company needs to survive. Oh, it is going to be spectacular when this company goes down in flames, guys. And it's just a shame that so many people are going to be hurt by it. But I did my best to warn people that this was coming. I tried. Meanwhile, Meta is also trying to change direction, although they don't have the same financial alarms going off that OpenAI does because Meta has access to all their ad revenue. From llamas to avocados, Meta's shifting AI strategy is causing internal confusion. Again, if everything is going so well in the AI bubble, why is everybody trying so hard to change direction here? Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg was so optimistic last year about his company's Llama family of AI models that he predicted they would become the most advanced in the industry and bring the benefits of AI to everyone. But after including a whole section on Llama in his opening remarks during Meta's earnings call in January of this year, he mentioned the brand name only once on the latest call in October. The company's obsession with its open source large language model has given way to a very different approach to AI, one focused around a multi-billion dollar hiring spree to bring in top industry talent that could help Meta take on the likes of OpenAI, Google, and Anthropic. Scrolling down here, until recently, Meta's unique position in AI was the open source nature of its Llama models. Unlike other AI models, Meta's technology was made freely available so third-party researchers and others could access the tools and ultimately improve them. Today, several tech companies are developing leading closed models, Zuckerberg wrote in a blog post in July 2024. But open source is quickly closing the gap. He's since started changing his tune. Zuckerberg hinted over the summer that Meta was considering shaking up its approach to open source after the April release of Llama 4, which failed to captivate developers. Zuckerberg said in July, "We'll need to be rigorous about mitigating these risks and careful about what we choose to open source. Avocado, when it's eventually made available, could be a proprietary model, according to people familiar with the matter. That means outside developers wouldn't be able to freely download its so-called weights and related software components." So this is a major policy shift going on within Meta right now, causing some consternation between different teams. Meanwhile, Apple's slow AI pace becomes a strength as the market grows weary of spending. You know, everybody for years, they criticized Apple saying, oh, you're not burning hundreds of millions of dollars on rapidly depreciating assets that don't generate any return on investment. What's the matter with you? Now everybody's like, huh, maybe Apple was right not to dive headfirst into this very shallow above ground pool. Shares of Apple were battered earlier this year as the iPhone maker faced repeated complaints about its lack of an artificial intelligence strategy. But as the AI trade faces increased scrutiny, that hesitance has gone from weakness to a strength, and it's showing up in the stock market. Through the first 6 months of 2025, Apple was the second worst performer among the Magnificent Seven tech giants as its shares tumbled 18% through the end of June. That has reversed since then, with the stock soaring 35%. While AI darlings like Meta and Microsoft have tumbled into the red, and even NVIDIA is underperforming. The S&P 500 index is up 10% in that time, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ index has gained 13%. It's remarkable how they have kept their heads and are in control of spending when all of their peers have gone the other direction, said John Barr, portfolio manager of Needham Aggressive Growth Fund, which owns Apple shares. This is a guy who manages an aggressive growth fund talking about how Apple has kept their heads while others were not in control of their spending. Tell me it's a bubble without telling me it's a bubble. All right, an aggressive growth fund manager is like the tech bro of tech bros outside of the Silicon Valley C-suites, and he's saying Apple kept their cooler heads. Of course, the rally has made Apple stock pricier than it has been in a long time. The shares are trading for around 33 times expected earnings over the next 12 months, a level they've only hit a few times in the past 15 years. With a high of 35 in September of 2020, the stock's average multiple over that time is less than 19 times, Apple is now the second most expensive stock in the Bloomberg Mag 7 index, trailing only Tesla's whopping valuation of 203 times forward earnings. Look, guys, the takeaway from this, and this is just my opinion, Apple was smart to not pour money blindly into this AI bubble. I don't think Apple will escape the AI bubble. I think their shares are going to get beaten down along with everything else when this bubble collapses. And in my opinion, that's actually going to be a good opportunity to scoop up some Apple shares at a steep discount. Right now, it's expensive, but keep an eye on a name like this. That's just my thoughts. Korea's national pension fund sells dollars to support the won. This story just made my head spin. This is grotesquely irresponsible, what they're doing in Korea. South Korea's National Pension Service has recently started selling dollars to bolster the won, according to a person familiar with the matter, reviving earlier efforts to support the currency. The National Pension Service, which held about $542 billion of foreign assets as of the end of September, started its sales as part of a tactical hedging strategy, the person said, asking not to be identified because the information is private. The move comes as the won has slid nearly 8% in the second half of the year, making it Asia's worst performing currency amid concerns about capital outflows and trade uncertainty. NPS had also supported the won through activities it called strategic hedges between January and May of this year. The finance ministry, the Bank of Korea, and the Ministry of Health and Welfare, and the National Pension Service, a four-party consultative group, have started talks on building a new framework balancing returns with currency market stability. And guys, take a minute to appreciate the recklessness of that statement, all right? The Ministry of Health and Welfare has no say over how your pension is managed. They're responsible for health and welfare. The Bank of Korea, that's a monetary policy organization. The finance ministry manages the government's checkbook. None of these organizations give a shit about your retirement. And yet the national pension system is allowing them to weigh in on Forex policy so that we can balance returns, how well your retirement is performing, with currency market stability, our political objectives. And this is my criticism of the entirety of this whole concept of retirement and the financial services industry, is their interests are not aligned with yours, and therefore you cannot trust them to act in your interest because these are not good people. And there it is in plain black and white ink. Meanwhile, private credit offers Bally's a $1.1 billion loan for New York City casino. Oh, yeah, that's exactly what New York City casino needs. President Trump sold his golf course, and they're going to put a casino on it. What's not to love in this story? Bally's has wrapped up a crucial deal to increase its term loan to $1.1 billion, allowing the casino operator to refinance its debt and pay fees tied to its New York State casino licenses. Funds linked to Ares Management, King Street Capital, and TPG Credit are providing an amended debt commitment to the junk-rated casino operator, according to a release on Monday. Bally's had asked investors for permission to sell a Rhode Island property that backed the debt and offered a yet-to-be-built Chicago casino as collateral. Number one, how do you offer something as collateral that hasn't been built yet? Okay, that's your first thing. And number two, take a look at Chicago or Chirac. What's going on in that city? Oh, yeah, you know what they need? They need a casino in Chicago. Lenders, of course, were wary of that proposal, and the company failed to secure the support it needed. The new amendment provided a $600 million term loan and a $500 million delayed draw term loan. The loans will mature in 5 years or in March of 2029 if Bally's bonds due that year are still outstanding at the time. All their casinos lose money, so of course their bonds will still be outstanding at the time when they'll either declare bankruptcy or default or try to somehow push it out another few years. The term loans will be secured by substantially all of Bally's material assets and its subsidiaries, including its 58% equity ownership of Intralot, while carving out assets held by Intralot, as well as the TriStar Entertainment Group and development stage properties such as those in New York. The company is putting everything they have up for collateral for this loan, which is, of course, rated junk. Last week, the New York Gaming Facility Location Board recommended Bally's $4 billion bid for a hotel and gambling complex at Ferry Point, located in the Bronx. The delayed draw loan will help pay for fees and related to the license for the complex, which is on the site of former Trump Corporation-owned golf course. Yeah, this project is doomed to failure. Absolutely doomed to failure. This is garbage debt. And of course, I'm sure they're going to try to park it in somebody's pension or 401k, which is what they always do. Meanwhile, U.S. hedge fund or U.S. fund EJF readies double-digit yield SRTs from regional banks. All right, and if you're wondering what a double-digit yield SRT is, I would refer you to the quote from The Big Short, dog shit wrapped in cat shit. That's what a double-digit yield SRT is. The yield is that high because the debt is probably going to go bad. Alternative asset manager EJF Capital plans to expand its investments in significant risk transfers from U.S. regional banks, its co-CEO Neil Wilson said. And anytime I see co-CEO, I think run, all right? I've never seen anything good come from a company with a co-CEO. The firm is working with 7 or 8 smaller U.S. regional banks on potential SRT deals tied to a loan portfolios totaling around $3.25 billion, said Wilson, who is also the firm's co-CIO. Okay, even better. Run twice as fast. The transactions could be priced at yields in the low double digits, he added. Oh my, yields in the low double digits means this is really dangerous debt. These transactions are bilateral from the conceptual phase until the settlement. The deals linked to the portfolios of assets such as commercial real estate loans could be executed over the next 12 to 18 months, he said, declining to name the banks. And he'll decline to name the banks because just naming the banks and how much it's costing to insure their loans might cause a run on those banks or might tank their stocks. That's why he won't name the banks. SRTs allow banks to insure loans against default by selling credit-linked notes to pensions, sovereign wealth, and hedge funds. The global market could double in size over the next 5 years, according to Man Group PLC. We talked all about SRTs yesterday, guys, and what they're doing and how the banks are lending money to hedge funds so that the hedge funds can buy SRTs that are used to get the risk off the bank's balance sheet, which is just a circular deal. Banks are not offloading this risk if they're the ones lending the money to the people who are buying the SRTs from them. What's the worst thing that could happen? Don't answer that. Meanwhile, one of the world's biggest bond fund managers warns of dangerous credit ratings dynamic, and this story is eerily similar of the GFC. The chief investment officer of one of the world's biggest bond funds is warning of dangerous assumptions in the credit market where inflated ratings may be giving investors a false sense of security as the Federal Reserve faces limits on its ability to step in. It is very, very dangerous to assume something has an investment grade rating just because the ratings agencies assign a rating to it. Understand what he's saying there. This is the chief investment officer of PIMCO saying you cannot assume it's investment grade just because the ratings agencies say it's investment grade. Holy shit, then what are the ratings agencies there for? They're just a fee shop. Dan Iveson, CIO of PIMCO, said on an episode of the Odd Lots podcast recorded as part of the show's 10-year anniversary celebrations, there's been so much growth in lending to lower quality companies. And again, the last major cycle was lending to lower quality households. The warning comes as private credit expands rapidly with funds competing aggressively to write loans once dominated by banks. That's pushed some investors to rely more heavily on third-party grades rather than their own steep credit analysis, which Iveson says echoes pre-crisis complacency in credit markets. It's not the first time the ratings in the booming private credit market have drawn scrutiny. The U.S. SEC is probing Egg & Jones Rating Company, one of the most prolific graders in the private credit space. Meanwhile, the Bank for International Settlements wrote in a report earlier this year that the influx of money pouring into private credit, especially from insurers, can lead to inflated assessments of credit worthiness and correspondingly undercapitalized exposures. Today, all too frequently, you'll have an investment grade rating from one entity, Iveson said. And again, market participants for years have always joked, if you can only find one investment grade rating, it's pretty fair to assume everyone else is below investment grade. In other words, guys, the people whose job it is to independently measure the risk of these investment products are not doing their job, probably because they're being paid to do so. They're afraid to accurately mark these things. And the chief investment officer of one of the biggest financial firms on Wall Street is warning how dangerous this is. This is exactly what happened with mortgage bonds leading up to the great financial crisis. Good God. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Espresso Beanies 8930. Message retracted. Espresso Beanies, I would love to read and respond, but I don't know what you said, bud. Thank you so much anyway for the support of the channel. I appreciate that very much. T.A. Chapman, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. He says, new addition to the family this past Saturday. Life is blessed. Well, congratulations, T.A. Chapman. I wish you the best. I hope mom and baby are doing well. Hashtag YOLO, healthy baby boy and mama doing great. Answered my question. That's good to hear, brother. A future melon head, like and sub. Congratulations and good luck to the baby melon, everybody. That's just great to hear. Thank you very much, T.A. Chapman. Appreciate that, sir. T.A. Chapman again, gifting 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships, more baby melons. Thank you, T.A. Chapman. I appreciate that very much. Hey, everybody, that's just a reminder while we're on the subject that every time or every member gets one free super chat a month. Feel free to use that. I will read and respond to your questions, comments, and concerns live on the air. Thanks again, T.A. Chapman. Congratulations to you and the family, sir. I appreciate that very much. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button right next to it for you new guys. Thank you very much for the super chats, everybody. Thank you also to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small and dream big.